you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another week of Elder Talk. True to our reputation, you know, we focus on providing you, our senior listening audience, with useful information, things that have practical value. This week, I think you're going to be really interested and pleased to find out that we have someone who's here to talk about things relating to real estate and residential concerns as you age. Questions about downsizing, moving out, and if you move out, to where, and what things do you need to consider before you do those things. This person is an expert in this area, focusing on the needs of seniors relating directly and indirectly to housing needs. Why don't you introduce our guest, Susan?
We have today Ted Gottlieb. Now, he is a real estate agent whose passion is helping older adults stay in their homes longer and safer. And then when the time for transition comes, to help them transition with dignity and find the resources they need. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about Ted. Ted has been ranked in the top 5% of St. Louis area agents for both 2015 and 2016 and is a certified residential specialist, which only 3% of all agents have earned. Now, he is also a certified senior advisor. Again, he is the only licensed real estate agent in the state of Missouri who has that senior or is that certified senior advisor. He's also a certified senior housing professional, certified aging in place specialist. He has a master's in business administration. He also serves on the board for the Mideast Area on Aging, is a Chesterfield Older Adult Task Force member, professionals in retirement and community living, and that's not even all. I could go on and on, but I think you get the idea that Ted can give us a lot of information about real estate as we age, when it's a good time to move to a smaller house, and so much more. Welcome, Ted.
Thank you. Appreciate
Welcome.
It.
I mean, boy, if anybody has a demonstrated commitment to serving seniors in their field, it sounds like both on the job and off, you've been focusing on gaining information and expertise in this area.
I have been. It's been a whole lot of fun. It's been very fulfilling in a variety of different ways. I thoroughly enjoy it. It's my pleasure to be there to assist really anybody, but especially my older adult clients.
So we've talked a lot on this show about the importance of housing questions as people age. I mean, we can argue that housing's always important, right? I mean, at all stages of life. But my contention is that for seniors, I mean, it's at a point in their life when perhaps they're not in the best position to make great decisions for physical reasons and perhaps others. And also, there's less margin for error. I mean, they really need to get that right. And never in their life has there been such a complicated array of options. So now they have to think about health issues, their medical needs, but possible inability to get about when they get where they are, the fact that they have different opportunities for group housing. And so it's hard for a person who's in their senior years to be able to face these choices without an expert.
You're right. It can be intimidating. It can be overwhelming. You know, as I get older, I'm a little bit more skeptical in life to begin with. So things that I hear, I question validity. And when I work with my older clients, you need to establish that level of trust, that you need to understand that you're really working on their behalf and you're there for to be their advocate. And it takes a little bit of time to really build that relationship. But once you have that, it's very satisfying to know that you're there for them. I get involved with not only the seniors, but their families and families that are in town and families that are out of town, and I create that level of trust. I actually will go and ask for permission to contact the kids and have conversation with the kids so that the children know what's going on. My folks are in Florida. My dad's 89. My mom is 85. And if someone were to try to sell my parents' home, I might be a little concerned about that. So I make those phone calls, and most of the times those calls are very well received.
Yeah, I can see that. So let's imagine then that members of our audience are considering downsizing. that they've been in a house for years, but they're wondering, gee, should we stay here? Because it has some advantages. The temptation is to stay because huge familiarity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And they know the neighbors, they know the neighborhood, they know the shopping nearby, and they trust that place. But on the other hand, maybe its configuration is not perfect anymore. Maybe there are other problems with maintenance and upkeep. How do you approach this subject when somebody comes to you with this issue?
You truly need to know what the motivations are as to why they are actually considering it. Is it too much house? Is it too much upkeep? Can they no longer do stairs comfortably? I've got many of clients that live in split-level homes or two-story homes, and they are having a tough time with the stairs. And that could be at almost any age, but the older they get, you hear about knee replacements and hip replacements, and it's very painful, and they just can't wait to get out because they can no longer manage the house itself. Things are not easy to get to anymore. Many homes that I go into with older clients, they have apparatus to reach areas where it's difficult to reach up high. So they're using grabs and all sorts of different devices along those lines. Even turning a handle of a door can be difficult. Going downstairs to the lower level and using the washer and dryer when it's not on the main floor. So sometimes just physically it doesn't make sense for us. And then other times we have, you know, I'll call younger at heart or younger physically, that don't mind those things and like to do those things, but they want a more active lifestyle and they don't want to be dealing with the maintenance that goes along with the house itself. They'd rather go into a townhome villa or maybe a condo in an apartment style environment.
And you know, sometimes I realize that people may be have this decision thrust on them in a way that it's really not so much a decision of whether or not to move, but they have to move. It could be a health crisis or whatever. But I think the majority of people, it's not quite that clear. And so they're struggling with the decision. I have an aunt and uncle who recently were dealing with this in Louisville. And they just kept talking about it because they couldn't bring themselves to kind of make that decision. And there wasn't, you know, a bell that was going off demanding that they act. So what is the approach that you would suggest when someone is at this indecision point? Would you suggest that they do as Chuck Colson was famous for doing? He would take a yellow pad and draw a line down the middle, and he would put, you know, the advantages and disadvantages on each side of the page, and he would look at the two options. For example, I guess using what you were talking about, a house, a two-story house, assume the bedroom's upstairs, and they have knee problems. Well, maybe it's cheaper to get a new knee and to install, you know, some hand support and to change the doorknobs and do various things and keep the house and pay somebody to come monthly. Now, I know that's not normally the right answer, but at least in order to be fair to someone who comes to you, I guess you'd be thinking, well, let's consider option A, staying where you are, and option B, that you're going to move, which brings a whole new set of questions.
Sure.
Where do you move? But lead us through that process.
Well, a lot of times, you know, I'll be like a politician or maybe a good attorney who will say, it depends. Okay, it really depends upon what their mindset is. Normally, when I'm coming in, I'm often coming in when the decision has pretty much been made in their minds that they're going to make a move.
Mm-hmm.
They realize that it's time.
Yeah,
and they
I
may
see
have been
that.
Putting that move off for the longest time, but for whatever reason it is, they've realized that now is the time to do that. And I often will come in to help them determine what the next best step will be and whether I will take them to look at villas or condos or a smaller ranch home or something along those lines, or if they're considering going to a senior community, then I typically will refer to what's known as a transition coordinator, a person that provides a free service, a referral service that will take them to different communities and tell them the good, the bad, and the ugly of each community. So it really truly depends upon, you know, what their mindset is at the time. But again, I'm normally called in when they've made that determination. And I like what you talked about the Ben Franklin clothes. I think he was the originator of that draw the line down the paper and put pluses on one side.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Minuses on the other. That's how he would get through a decision. And then when I was classically trained in salesmanship, they often would have me do that. But the trick was is that you would talk about all the positives and help them get that list, and then you would say, okay, so what are the negatives? And you'd shut up. That's how it was done. Okay,
yeah.
So I'm not suggesting that we do that. But the whole idea is to really help them understand that, keeping in mind, too, that most older adults really have two things in mind. This is per David Soleil, who wrote a book called How to Say It to Seniors, and that they want to maintain control, and they're concerned about legacy. Those two very important things.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, very difficult to really, really give up that control. And all the memories that go into that home. I mean, it's an emotional time for a lot of people.
That's huge, I think.
Well, that's a question I have is, what do you do in those situations where, okay, you have those seniors that are willing to call you, and then you have those seniors who really need to make a move, but it's going to have to be the kids that are involved in that. I mean, is there a good way to navigate that?
Well, and let me tag to that question, the fact that there's this inertia that people fight. In other words, to stay where you are is a decision.
Mm-hmm.
So like my aunt and uncle, if you'd asked them if they'd made a decision, they would say no. But the fact is, 3 years has gone by.
Right.
So, you know, for the past 3 years, there was a decision.
Right.
And there's we have to recognize there's a price paid for what we don't see. Just because we don't know that new place, that very social environment, that community where you're interacting with new people, you know, those things, those wonderful things that might exist in a new place, you know, just because you don't experience them, it's easy to ignore them and to just think about, well, this is our familiar home. But I do think that we're fighting inertia. So is it sometimes then, getting to Susan's question, is it sometimes the kids who recognize this first and are maybe suggesting that you come and talk to mom or dad?
It is often the child, typically the daughter, but it's the child. It can be the physician, it could be the attorney, it could be the financial advisor. I've had situations where I was brought in because the doctor said it was time to go and be somewhere where you could be more social. And this woman said she's lonely, her husband passed away, it's too much housekeeping, all the right reasons as to why. So part of the process of educating mom or dad in regard to why it may be time to make a move could come down to those things. It's also food and nutrition. I mean, historically, when we look at the statistics, is that older adults who stay in their homes longer than when you would think that they should tend to suffer from higher levels of depression. Their wellness is not as good physically.
They're isolated often.
Yeah. So once somebody finally makes the decision, voluntarily or not, to make that move, they tend to be a whole lot happier. And then you always hear, gosh, I should have done that years ago. So really, I understand why we are hesitant to leave our comfortable homes, but I also understand the benefits of doing so when the time is right.
Yeah, and so I think our message today, your message, as I hear it, is not that it always makes sense to move, but that, remember, there are alternatives to where you are. And it might make sense to be looking at those. And certainly I can buy that for some of our listeners, where they are is the perfect place for them to be. But not all of our listeners. And there's a tendency for all of them to say, this is familiar. I know this. It's the devil I know versus the devil I don't know, maybe somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, which I think is a bad reason, they just cling to that piece of earth as long as they can.
You can, but then you have the opposite, and you have the younger, older adults in their 50s and 60s that have raised their children, that have realized that now's my time. So they sell the house in the suburbs, and they buy a brand new home in the city, and they put an Airbnb in the basement, and they're all excited about their new life. I have clients that have done that, and they're just absolutely thrilled to be out of the burbs and to be out of the home where they raised the children. They still love their children. There's still room for their children in their home, but now they've got an Airbnb in the basement.
Yeah, yeah. Or if they don't add that additional step with the Airbnb, one thing that they're relieved of is this constant responsibility regarding what was probably a larger house, a bigger yard, and it becomes such a claim on our time when we're not at work. I have friends. This would be me if I wasn't more often hiring it done. I'm just not the person who who has that gift. But I have friends who, when they get off work, they go outside and start working on their house. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, some of them enjoy it, but would they truthfully say that that's the best thing they could do with their time? But it's just they accept it as a way of life. But you're right. When our kids are grown, we have a chance to do something very different. And that's where you come in.
Absolutely.
So let's assume then, let's go back to that scenario you described. So maybe you've been contacted by either the children or the parents, and you come and meet with them. Kind of walk us through from there what the conversation is like once the decision's been made to sell.
Well, we always want to know what the next step is. Where do we go first? Do I move first? Do I put the house on the market and then move after I've sold it? So we have to go through a lot of the basic questions about the finances behind it. How quickly are they prepared to make the move? What do they do with their stuff? Because if you're going from a 3,000 square foot home to a 1,500 square foot home or an 800 square foot apartment in a community, you've got a lot of stuff. What do I do with it?
I actually hear that as a reason why people don't want to move.
Right.
Is I could never.
Who's going to watch my stuff?
Right. Well, exactly. What am I going to do with all my stuff? Yeah. And I'd have to get rid of it. And to them, that's another piece of giving up control.
Uh-huh.
I think there's the giving up of control of your, you know, sometimes physically that happens, but then now you're making a decision for me, and now I have to get rid of all of my stuff too. But, I mean, maybe that's my only experience, but
no, it's true.
What do you say to that though when it comes up, Tim?
Well, it's the challenge becomes all the memories and the history that belong to all those things. So I'm going to go into an 800 square foot apartment. What will actually fit? Maybe it gives me an excuse to go out and buy new stuff and I can let the other stuff go. But if they're family heirlooms and really pieces of history that you want to have with you, then the communities either have floor plans or have a move-in manager that will help you decide what fits and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. Or there's that professional transition coordinator who will come in and do that, or the move manager. There's all sorts of great resources that actually will actually pack you up, move you, unpack you, and you leave the house at 9 o'clock in the morning, at 5 o'clock at night,
so you
go
into
your new place.
You don't have to pack the stuff.
You don't have to do anything unless you
choose to. You can get the emotions out of it.
Correct. You can take everything. You can have somebody else take care of all that for you, and it's very, very reasonably priced. Oftentimes, you take what is really important to you, then oftentimes it's a wonderful thing that you can do is you can allow your children or family members to take some of the other big pieces that you no longer have need for. It's a wonderful way to, I guess, enhance your legacy, to knowing that you're going to have some of your heirlooms being with somebody else forever and a day.
But, you know, the thing that we hear more, there's an article about this in Wall Street Journal not long ago, is that by the time the parents often are prepared to do this, the kids have full houses of furniture. Mm-hmm. And so the article was about, you know, what do you do with this stuff that your aging parents are giving you, and you don't want to hurt their feelings.
Sure.
Because some of them, you know, they regard them as being great mementos of something, perhaps.
Right.
But there's no place for it in the often the homes of their kids.
Yeah. There's an article or a book that's called Your Kids Don't Want Your Stuff.
So
that's really what it's all about, and it's very, very true. If you look at estate sales, and I go, I'm involved with helping people sell their property through estate sales, and I refer that to some really quality, wonderful individuals who can determine value and get it sold. But normally, the china that you had to have when you were married and the beautiful dining room sets, they very rarely, if ever, sell. Mm-hmm. Our generation and younger generations don't have a desire for those type of things, and it's heartbreaking when you see that and how much that meant. My mother has a whole bunch of things that, you know, my kids might get, but my kids don't want it, and I have heirlooms in my basement as well. So that's where, once you've taken what you must have and you've given some other things that are really important to you to your immediate family, you think about an estate sale. And there's a variety of different types of estate sales that you can do. You can actually do it all online, where a company will actually come in and they will actually take everything out, photographic, and it's available worldwide. And then there's also folks who will do that estate sale in the home or in the condo, but normally in the home. And there's a profit built into their services, but you end up putting probably thousands of dollars more in your pocket than you would if you did your own garage sale.
Because they handle it and they're professional.
And they know the value of it.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. And I like the fact that they're paid based on a percentage of the sales price.
Right.
Let's speak, though, to those people who are just not prepared to part with these things for whatever reason. I mean, those containers that are delivered to your house now, I mean, many of our listeners are familiar with this. I mean, it if they're willing to pay the monthly charge, they can take that excess stuff, hang on to it. Not that, Ted, I know you wouldn't advocate this, nor would I, but still, you know, for those people who just can't let go of it at this point, it shouldn't be the reason you don't move.
Right.
I mean, it's probably better to take that 25, 30, 40, 50 bucks a month it might cost to pay to store it. And if that's what's holding you back from a new life in a better place that meets other needs you have, and then you can distribute that perhaps in the future. But that's for those people who insist on hanging on. But I want to take a break, and then when we come back, I want to talk a little more about that issue of should they stay in the house while it's being tried, while they're trying to sell it, because furnishing, you know, we hear is helpful and all those other considerations. I want you to take a few minutes and talk a little more about that. This is Elder Talk. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
We're back with our guest, Ted Gottlieb, who's an expert in real estate matters as they pertain to seniors. We were talking before we went into the break about some of those questions that come up when people decide they're going to sell their house as they age. This is a house that they've probably been in for decades, lots of memories and all that, and difficult decision. But those people, once they make that decision, they contact Ted. Ted will come and see them. And I know one of the questions that must come up early is, okay, what is the logistics of this? I'd like to be looking for something now and go ahead and sell this place. And so how do I time it to where I don't sell this before I have a new place?
I don't want to move twice.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
You hear that a lot, and you wish that you could time things perfectly so that you sell something and then go and make your move right around the same time. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. So when it comes to selling a house or a home, it's an art form. You really need to prepare the home to sell, because the first time someone actually walks into your house is actually the second time they've seen it. They've seen it online. The majority of people buying homes are using the internet to find the homes that they like to see. They're only going to come see it if they like it. So oftentimes, I will have the conversation about either staging, if the house is already empty, or restyling, which is a different art form, where somebody comes in, an interior designer comes in and really does my dirty work for me. They will say all the things that I often would like to say about the home without offending people. But here's my example. I moved into my home and there was wallpaper everywhere. And we took down all the wallpaper in the house except for one room, which is our master bedroom. And every day I walk into that room and I don't see it anymore. It's gone. Now, it's still there, but it's gone. I've become used to it. That's the point. The point is that people that are walking into your house are going to see those things. And often people can't see beyond it. It turns them off, and it could impact the saleability of the house, or it can impact how much they're willing to pay for the house, because they're looking at the long list of things that need to be done. So when you're proactive when it comes to selling a home, we're doing inspections possibly. I'm walking through with my eye, and I used to buy investment property. I have a fine eye for things, and I notice things, and I notice things that I assume every other real estate agent is going to see and going to point out to their clients. So if I can take those potential objections off the table initially, it's going to allow for greater success and ultimately net my sellers more when it comes time for closing.
So if somebody has furnishings then and decor and whatnot that is dated, and our audience has got to be prepared to admit to themselves that maybe they've been there a long time and what one time was nice may not be nice anymore or attractive. I can see the argument that would say that you need to go ahead and deal with that, which means bringing someone in, whether it's changing the furniture or as you said, restyling. that seems to suggest that there's advantages to the person not being there if it's going to be a big change in the way their house looks.
Well, oh, for sure. If you're going to stage the house, meaning the old furniture's gone, the new furniture's in, then you're out of the house. If you're going to restyle, then you are really minimalizing what's there. You might be changing wallpaper from wallpaper to paint. You might be taking out carpet and putting in hardwoods, or maybe not having to go to that extent.
Yeah.
But you're still modifying the home so that every day that you come home, you have to worry about where you put your shoes and when I'm leaving, is someone going to be seeing my house? So for most cases, people are still living in their homes and they're showing it and they're working their schedules around the showings, and there's all really some really cool automated tools that allow sellers to approve the showing of their home based upon their schedule. Of course, as a real estate agent, I'm encouraging that whenever you get a showing, you do whatever you can to show the property, but not everybody can do that. But the whole idea of staging is I want the house to look as great as it can possibly look. If you're not there, that's great. If you are there, that's great too. We just need to be prepared every day that someone's going to come into our home. And sometimes they don't give us much notice. Like if you have the dogs there, if you have kids there, and you know, normally we're used to throwing our clothes on the floor versus putting it in the hamper. All those things need to be kept into consideration so that we can very quickly approve a listing. Now, oftentimes we can put requirements in the listing criteria that says we need a 1 hour notice or something like that. So if you happen to reside close to the house, you can go back and make sure everything's looking okay, turn on the lights and do all those type of things. For the older adults, we're talking about the seniors, showing a property can be very disruptive. First of all, I may not be feeling well that day. I might have physical therapy in the house. I'm just not up to it. All those things come into play, and oftentimes that will hamper the sale. So if someone who's older and really needs a lot of help but is not well, it probably makes sense to make the move first if you can afford it, and that's where the decision comes into play.
And I see that. I really do. As I'm sitting here imagining how to prioritize these two things, selling a house and moving to a new place, it just seems to jump out that for most older people, since really it's getting the new place that's a more complicated part of the transaction. If you see it as a two-part challenge, then clearly the bigger question is, have you found a place you really like? Can you get into it? And assuming you don't need the money from the sell the current house, I mean, I get it, Ted. It would seem to make much more sense for someone to start picking out their place first and then have it identified. Feel free to go ahead and even close on it, right, and move into it. And then that allows you the opportunity to go ahead and do. You've used the word staging, which I'm familiar with that term, but I'm sure many of our audience is not. And so you mentioned briefly what it was, but I want you to expand on that a little bit. It means you essentially rent a house full of furniture, right?
You do. There are professional stagers out there that will take an empty pallet and they'll make it look beautiful. They will put in furniture where it needs to go, and it'll be the right style furniture, the right size furniture, and the right amount of furniture in certain rooms. Most of the times you'll find it in the kitchen, the dining area, one master bedroom, and then a living room or family room or great room.
Sometimes, and wall hangings, I mean everything.
It looks beautiful, so that when you look at some of my listings, most of my listings online, they look as though they really, really are well prepared for sale. And that's what attracts people. It's part of the process if you want to get people in the door.
Yeah, I mean, think of it. I'd say to our listeners, think of it this way. The difference between taking your house and fixing it up the best you can, in other words, doing the things that Ted was suggesting, whether it's repainting, touching up in various ways, but contrast that with those beautiful model homes that you go in and see in new houses. And in those model homes are staged. Those model homes, somebody's come in, when you see even silverware sitting out and just everything just perfect, that is what your house would look like. And maybe there would be some painting required and a few things corrected.
There could be toning down the walls and things like that. I have a great example. I have an older client that went, you know, a couple that went to an assisted living community, and they took everything out of their house and they didn't want to stage it. And we talked about staging, and I talked with them the fact that the first price reduction that I'm going to suggest that they have will have more than paid for the staging. And that's really what it comes down to, because staging can cost $2,000, $3,000. Okay, the first price decrease that we're going to take is going to be probably dramatically more than that in order to get people in the door. So when you first walked into this house, there was an empty home. You saw the dimples of the furniture on the carpet, and it wasn't inviting. And now you walk in, it looks like a show place where someone who made an offer on that property said, I love the property. I especially love the big dog that you have on the fireplace. I want the big dog. Okay, so the big dog sold the place. But the point is that it looked beautiful and it attracted a great number of people. And the owners are very, very happy with the fact that we eventually staged it. And we still got a little bit less from the house that they wanted for it. But we still got a contract on it because of the fact that it was ready to go.
Yeah, I buy that completely. And another advantage of going ahead and moving out then is also that you take your furniture and you get to use it in your new place, as opposed to, I've heard of people who will move and think, gee, I can't take my furniture with me because you can't have the place look empty, so they're afraid that they'll hurt sales. But this is the answer to that. You move your stuff wherever, you know, whether you're going to put it in storage, sell it, or move it into your new place, and you stage the empty house. So $2,000, let's say, $2,000 or $3,000. I paid a little more than that, incidentally, in Florida, but it was for more than 6 months. It was, you know, I think it may have been 9 months in this slowdown. So they will pay an amount based on, in part, on the amount of time. Is that correct?
Normally, it'll cover a 4 to 6 month period of time. Different companies might have slightly different policies and pricing schedules, but it's all pretty much the same thing. And I'm confident enough in knowing that if it's staged properly and if it's priced properly, I'm not talking about giving it away, but really pricing it where it should be, that sweet spot, and you know that it's priced well, with that within a 2 or 3 day period of time, you've got a handful of showings already. And I know within a week, I've got 5 or 6 showings. If I don't have that, I know that I've missed the mark. And so sometimes you go out a little bit higher than you want to because you want to maintain the listing, you want to earn the listing. The clients are very emphatic about it. So you say, okay, we'll do it under the following agreement. And that agreement is that if we don't have X number of showings in the first week to 10 days, we need to drop it and drop it quickly to where it really should be. And we continue to follow that in a systematic manner until we start getting showings and then we get offers. But you know if the price is right by the moment you put it out there.
Yeah, yeah. And then by using this approach too, the person has probably, at the time they made the decision that they were going to sell it, they probably immediately started going and looking. So when you have someone like that, so you may be handling the sale of that house, but tell us about what goes on in your presenting them with options on the other end, representing them in the purchase of something, if in fact they're purchasing something as opposed to renting something.
Sure.
Facility.
Or the senior facilities.
Right. So you got really three different scenarios here. But if you go onto the scenario that they're going to be buying something, and again, they could be buying something here in St. Louis, they could be buying something nationwide. Now, I do refer nationally, and every year I refer between probably 4 and 5 or 6 folks that I know from here that I'll refer to other agents nationwide because I go and I screen them.
More in the South?
Some in the South. I have a couple in Texas recently, a couple in Florida. That tends to be where we're going. I haven't had as many people move out west, but Arizona's a pretty popular place as well for folks that are this neck of the woods. But we'll sit and we'll have what I call a buyer's consultation. We will sit down and go over the buying process again because it's been some time since they've done it. And I want to make sure that they're comfortable with the process and comfortable understanding the way that I'm going to help them go about the process. And being of someone who used to buy investment property, again, with that eye that I look at things, I'm the first one to tell my clients to run away. I'm the first one to point out things driving into the community. Or I'll ask questions. I said, hey, pretty nice industrial park we're driving through, right? You don't mind that, do you? Are you okay with this? Are you okay with that? And sometimes I'm subtle, and then after the first couple of hours that we've worked together and we're very comfortable with each other, I'm probably a little bit less subtle, and we have a wonderful time doing it. But they understand that I'm doing it for them. So if I see something that is not right within the house, I show them. We talk about it, and I point out all sorts of different things. So by the end of the first day that we're working together, they have their eyes are wide open in regard to what they're looking at. And they start telling me what they see when they drive up versus me having to initiate the conversation.
Do they often sometimes have cast such a broad net because they maybe don't have a clear picture in their mind to where you're not only showing them perhaps attached homes in gated communities, but also they may say, well, gee, maybe we would like a smaller house that's freestanding, or maybe we'd like a condominium that is in a tower or a 4 or 5 story structure. Do you sometimes hit all three of those very different options?
We just don't know.
Sometimes we do, and that's why the buyer's consultation is so important. It's not only for them, but it's for me. It helps set expectations. It helps me understand what they're looking for. And my job is not to throw a bunch of properties to them to look at, but my job is to listen to what they're looking for and help them narrow their choices. So we will go and we might see a single family home. We might see a townhouse. We might see a condo. Oftentimes I'll say to them, go out, drive around, see what you think, look at neighborhoods. I have someone right now who's coming into town. They've bought 11 homes over the years. They're moving back to be close to family. They're in their mid-50s, and they've put 3 offers on 3 different homes in 3 different areas in St. Louis so far. Each one they've lowballed. Okay, and no matter
so
how
by
hard
lowballed,
I try,
what you mean is they
came in well below market value because they didn't have to buy. They didn't necessarily care. They wanted a deal.
They wanted a deal.
Yeah, but there's deals and there's deals. Right now, we're still in a seller's market. There aren't as many deals out there. There's still a lot of demand for homes. And if you come up with a reasonable price, and that's what my job is, and you have pre-qualification or pre-approval and you're ready to go, you're typically going to be successful. But sometimes people have to learn the hard way. So now we're at the point where we finally had the conversation was, he goes, you know what, I'm going to stop fighting you. I said, well, it's about time. Okay. And we laugh about it, but he finally realized he's getting beat up. His wife is upset, and he's decided that he can't beat the system. He still knows he's going to get a fair deal. He still knows he's going to the property has to appraise. He still knows that he has an inspection, but he realizes that he's not going to get the deal that he wanted. So it's really taking time to educate them, let them go on their own. I say go to open houses. Just let them know that you're working with me so that wonderful salesperson that's in there doesn't call you up and bother you. Just go out and kick the tires. Honestly, I mean, the more work that they can do on their own, selfishly, it's better for me. But it gives them a chance to really do their thing without being encumbered by me. It allows them to talk and have those conversations that they may not have if I'm with them. So I encourage that. But you really got to go out and you got to get a feel for the type of community that you want to live. Are you wanting urban? Are you wanting rural? You know, how rural is rural? Do you want septic? Do you want oil? Do you want propane? Would you rather have public utilities? All those questions come into play. So there's a lot of questions to ask, and that happens up front. And if I do it up front, it makes life a whole lot easier.
So tell me then, what are the 4 or 5 factors that you see most commonly in terms of priorities? I assume that your senior clients' security would be big, right?
You don't really hear about it that much if you're talking about the suburbs. I'm not finding that there are a lot of older adults that are moving into urban settings. I think it's a shame because the infrastructure's there. They don't always have the support systems there, the shopping and things like that. And security probably does come into play. I'm more of a suburban guy than I am an urban guy. My wife and I have had that conversation. Why don't we move here? Why don't we move there? I said, well, because where I live right now, I don't have to think twice about where I go and what I do. I'm concerned that when I'm older, I'll be more vulnerable, whether that's true or that's not. So I want to be in a safe environment. So what does that safe environment mean to me? Conversely, when I was a kid, I had an aunt and uncle who lived in New York City, and I can see myself living in Manhattan, but I can't see myself living in other municipalities. So it's really strange. It's what strikes you and what your mindset is and what you're looking for is really, really important. Proximity to museums and the zoo and sports and all those things. A lot of people really, really want that. And there's some really wonderful pockets, I'll say, in South City and South County, but in South City specifically, in certain pockets that are just really, really wonderful, inviting, very neighborhoody feel.
So what about walkability? Is that important typically, meaning the ability to walk to some stores or
Unless you're talking about Webster Groves and Kirkwood and maybe Clayton, I don't know that it really truly exists.
Or Central
anymore.
West End, you're right. There aren't many of those in St. Louis.
Right, and you know that's why some of these, I'd say, planned communities and 55 over communities are nice when they have those accommodations. I've been in certain places throughout the country that one of them's in the Silver Spring, Maryland area. It's called Leisure World, and there's more housing inventory there of every type of configuration you can imagine, but also within Leisure World, and they have buses that they drive people and shuttle people around. They have large-scale supermarkets. You name it, it is a retail shopping plaza within this community. That's awesome. We need more of that here in St. Louis, and other places need it as well, and I'm convinced that if it was in a nice, safe environment with all of the accommodations that people are looking for, it would be gangbusters.
But wasn't that what Newtown was supposed to be out in St.
Yeah,
Charles?
I remember that was the
wasn't
message.
That what they were supposed to?
Yeah, and it's an awesome community, though it hasn't really appealed to the older adult. It's appealed to a lot of single people, families without kids. There are some families with kids as well. I've sold numerous properties there. I think it's awesome. But that's one of those communities, it seems like you either like it or you don't. It's in the middle of not much. Now, there's a lot going on around it, and things are growing. But if you go outside of that area, you're going through in some industrial areas. But once you're inside of it, it's beautiful. They have canals. They have shops. It's a really, really cool place.
And you mentioned Webster and Kirkwood. Kirkwood in particular jumps out to me as, I mean, those are places where, as you're aging, you can have a home that's affordable and that still you can easily walk to lots of things. I would think that those would be attractive for that reason. It's like a small town yet close in.
Absolutely. And the older I get, the more I appreciate it being there. And it's a wonderful, quaint community. And I think of Webster, downtown Webster Groves. I think of Kirkwood and Clayton, but probably not on the same level. I mean, it's just that warmth, and mm-hmm. it takes you back to the old day. And that's why you understand why people love living in those communities. Very
yeah.
walkable.
Clayton is expensive, and it is a little buttoned up.
It
you
is.
Know, it's not, you don't feel all warm and fuzzy about Clayton.
No.
Whether you can afford it or not. Then there's the Central West End, which should not go unmentioned, but I think that gets back to the point you were making a while ago. I think that people have security concerns, and it just doesn't come up because they've ruled it out.
Right.
So they're not talking to you about security, but in fact, they're not even considering it because they assume it's not mm-hmm. safe. And I don't know. My wife and I had a corporate event, so we stayed at the Chase for a few days to do a retreat. And so we had the chance to kind of walk around a little bit in Central West End. And we marveled at the amount of construction and that wonderful new Whole Foods market. And we do think now, I'll be 60 next year, and we do think now from the standpoint of, you know, when we downsize, you can see why I'm so interested in this discussion. When we downsize, you know, what type of community will we be drawn to? And there is something tempting about that, but we do wonder if it's really safe.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's the million-dollar question, and you're going to get different perspectives from different people. All I know is right now I have a client that's leaving that area because of they have young children, and they've decided it's not the place that they want to be. There's been gunfire and all sorts of things that, you know, you don't want your children to be around. And when you find shell casings near your front door, but you drive it during the day, and everything seems to be just wonderful. So it's really hit or miss. That's why I like the idea of places like the Chase and some of these other newer buildings that are coming up that are higher density units are beautiful, and they have concierge and security and all those things, and it could work. And as we progress and as we mature as a community, we hope that things get better and we can all live happily ever after, and that's really what it's all about.
Well, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll be back in a few moments and continue talking about housing for us seniors. Well, we'll take a break now. We'll be back in a moment with Elder Talk to further talk about housing as it relates to seniors. Back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Well, we're back with Elder Talk, and we're talking to Ted Gottlieb, who's a realtor who focuses on serving seniors in their housing needs. So, Ted, before we went into the break, we were talking about, people's range of options when they decide to sell their house and move somewhere else. We talked about kind of both sides of that transaction, the selling side and where they go from there. I want to come back for a minute to for just a second and talk about the selling side. There's been lots of publicity and whatnot, and I see that there's advertising and billboards and whatnot. You know, we buy your house, or we buy an ugly house, or, you know, as is, you know, people who come in and I assume pay reduced prices for houses. I would think seniors would be a target of that sort of marketing. Give our listeners kind of more information about what that is and whether it makes sense for them to ever consider that.
There are certain situations where it makes sense for homeowners to sell their homes as is. And those are situations similar to, like, I have foundation issues, major structural issues that need so much repair work that it just doesn't make sense for me to do. I may not have the finances to do it. So sometimes that happens. And there are investors out there that go out and try to buy homes for as little as possible. I think if we have to go that route, the way that I approach it is we try to maximize how much we can get an investor to pay for it. So here, this is how the scenario works. I'll be called in and someone says, I want to sell my house. I'm motivated to move. I'm thinking about selling it as is. I'll say, well, there's three different ways that I go about selling homes. And there's retail, which means it's ready to go. It's been updated. It can get top market value. And then there's wholesale, which is the complete opposite. Basically 50 cents on the dollar, sometimes 40 cents, sometimes 60 cents, but you're really leaving money on the table for the convenience of selling it in its current condition. The benefit of selling it that way is it's typically sold as is. You don't have to do anything. You can leave whatever you want behind. And again, if that's something that we need to do, then we do that. But there's also a category that I call sub-retail. And sub-retail is if it's worth $100,000 retail and it needs $20,000 worth of work to get it to that number, then maybe we market it at $75,000 or $80,000. We try to get someone who's going to be an owner-occupant to come in, who's getting a bit of a deal. They're buying it below market value, but it's putting more money in your pocket. That seems to work very, very well. Worst case scenario is if it doesn't sell for what we need to sell it for there, we can always go to a wholesaler. But the wholesaler is really there to buy it for as little as possible. They're not necessarily as concerned about your well-being as they are for the bottom line. So when I get into situations where wholesale makes sense, and again, that may be 20 or 30% of the time, if that, I bring in three or four or five wholesalers that I've known throughout the years that I know will actually follow through after tying up the property and putting a contract on it. And I'll call them up and I'll say, we're having a cattle call at 123 ABC Street between the hours of 10 and 11. Come to the house, and if you're interested in the house, we'd like to know what you're willing to pay for it. And the first question they ask every time we do it is, how much do they want for it? And I say, that's not where we're going. I said, what they want for it is really beyond the point. How much are you willing to pay for it? That's what I want to know. They want to know where to start, okay? And I'm not going to tell them where to start. So over the years, I've gotten my folks anywhere between $20,000 and $90,000 more because I was the middleman holding the investors accountable.
But still, we don't have much time here, and I wish we had more time to talk about this topic because, and I know you don't disagree with me, I would say that it's very unusual for a senior to be better off doing that sort of wholesale sale. Don't you agree?
No, I would agree wholeheartedly. Again, the only time I really want to consider that is if there are significant issues with the house that would cost so much to repair that it's we just don't have the money to do it or the time to do it and we need to get out quickly. But no, I'm not a proponent of it at all.
Yeah, it exploits the lack of expertise on the part of the average senior person, or it exploits an emergency. I mean, I get it. There's a place for pawn shops. Pawn shops serve a need for people who are desperate, and there's a place for selling as-is houses. But generally speaking, except for the exceptions that you mentioned, I know that they exist, Ted. But for the most part, people should rule that out, and I think that they should do the necessary, even minor repairs, so that they get to that sub-retail, at least that you describe, where they're not, you know, selling it at a liquidation foreclosure sort of price. And I think that generally they'll do better. But yeah, I'm glad that we talked about this, because really much of the targets for purchasing these houses under those conditions are seniors, because they want out, and they're relatively unsophisticated, and they're just a target, I think, to a great extent. I don't mean to indict everybody in that field. I mean, everybody is out to make a living. I understand that, but I just don't think it's in the best interest of the vast majority of our listeners.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly, and I could talk all day long about situations that I've run into where they've left tens of thousands of dollars on the table because they thought that that was the right decision to make, and it's very painful to watch.
Yeah. Boy, you know, this time has gone so quickly. Ted, you're a wonderful guest. Lots of useful information. We will I promise you that we'll have Ted back on to talk more about issues relating to housing. We didn't get into talking about some of the special arrangements that might be available for seniors who have special needs, you know, whether it's assisted living or some sort of residential care, those sorts of group housing options. So we will definitely have Ted back in the future, but Ted Gottlieb has been our guest. He is a realtor, but a realtor who specializes in the needs of seniors. So this has been another hour of Elder Talk. See you next week.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.